Welcome, folks, back to this new episode of Room Temp. It is Wednesday night, actually. We'll be getting this to you guys a little bit early this week, but we wanted to give you guys our little rundown of the playoffs, round two coming up in the NFL. We've already kind of given you our wrap of the college football championship. We had an interview with Dan Wolken coming up for you later in the episode, but for right now, how are you guys feeling? How are we doing tonight?
I'm feeling fucking great,
man. Yeah, morale's at an all-time high. Still no water at the house. Got a three-hour class coming up here in an hour. But, yeah, we got a great fucking interview with Dan coming up. So I'm pretty hype about it.
Yeah, we got a nice little church basketball semi-league that we started with some friends, with Sean and myself in here in Pittsburgh, doing that tonight, doing it live.
I get buckets.
Sean gets stuffed at the rim by me.
No, I get buckets.
You know who gets buckets? Does LaMelo Ball get buckets?
No, I fucking hate them. They dropped 29 points. Granted, I do have to say his one assist, his behind, like, no look behind the back, like, whatever pass that was, it was kind of lit.
10 points, 9 assists for LiAngelo. And 19 points for LaMelo. LiAngelo, shit.
15-year-olds should not be able to 16. Do that. 16-year-olds should not be able to do that.
Granted, like, you and I were looking at the highlights and we were like, this looks like a YMCA league, but...
It did. I mean, it literally looks like if that team were coming to play our church basketball group tonight, but...
We could compete.
Dude, I read an article about it, and the team that they were playing, they played their second team. Like, it wasn't even the other team starters.
Yeah. Okay, that makes more sense.
They probably paid them a lot of money.
And they only won by 10 points.
They probably paid a lot of money.
But, dude,
that.
They dropped 29, so, you know, that's all that matters.
So, I mean, are you kidding me? Thoughts on them, Ben?
Dude, I mean, LaMelo only scored 10 points. Like, LiAngelo scoring 19, like, granted, it was against the second team, but, like, I was pretty impressed with him. You know what I mean? Like, yeah. Everyone's always toting LaMelo and being like, oh, my God, LaMelo dropped 92 in high school on 55 shots in one game. Like, LaMelo's got a new shoe out. LaMelo's doing this. LaMelo's doing that. And LiAngelo was the only one getting shoplifting, getting kicked out of UCLA by his dad. And he comes out there, has the better overall game. I mean, like, I'm here for LiAngelo, man. Like, if any ball is going to make it, like, I want it to be LiAngelo because he is definitely the forgotten fucking ball. Like, I feel like LeVar just gives less
shit. He's not forgotten at all. He's just definitely got – oh, wait. LaMelo's the younger one.
Correct.
LiAngelo's the middle one.
Correct. Yeah, LiAngelo is out here getting himself fucking trapped in China. Are you kidding me? He is not forgotten. Trump had to get him.
But he doesn't get, like – in LeVar's eyes, like, it's LaMelo and Lonzo. Like, he never talks about LiAngelo.
Because LeVar didn't give the middle one a shoe deal doesn't mean anything to him.
Or anything. Only thing LeVar ever did for him was just yank him out of a nice, pretty, I mean, granted, he was suspended all year, but, like, he's still a freshman in UCLA, like, yanked him clean out of there and sent him to Lithuania. Like, fuck out of here, bro.
Then we got John Gruden being sworn in, or officially sworn in.
$100 million.
I'm gonna call it sworn in for $100 million. They put on airs for John Gruden in that press conference. We kind of mentioned him, but what are our thoughts on John Gruden taking over the Raiders?
Well, I like him. I've always loved Gruden. Some people can't stand him. I don't understand where that comes from. I think he's gonna be great. I did see that his so-called hire for QB coach is not going to do it now.
Really?
Yeah, just read that. I mean, he definitely has some... he can't do it all by himself.
No.
I don't think any coach can.
I mean,
I think most head coaches these days, like, obviously Bill Belichick's a fucking systematic, like, dude, but, like, I think the head coaching train is now not leading more to, like, having assistants that are really, really good at what they do, and you're just a really good unifier and getting, like, the team fired up and, like, whatnot. Like
I mean, he's got the Rams quarterback coach as his offensive coordinator. Like, I mean, you know, yeah, if anyone's going to do it, it's going to be someone on the Rams. Am I right?
No, shut the fuck up.
I mean, maybe.
I just had to put that plug in there.
It drives me nuts. He didn't win him any playoff games this year, did he, Ben?
No, he didn't.
I just got so much joy out of hearing you say that.
Yeah.
I need to knock on wood.
Yeah, you might not want to speak too fucking soon, man.
I'm not. I'm being careful.
I take back. Atlanta Falcons I take back that everything beat us I said. Is gonna do probably the same thing to you.
You would like that, wouldn't you?
I wouldn't. Yeah. As a matter of fact, I would like that a lot. Yeah,
I almost said a word that we have agreed we're not gonna say. Right there. I saw red real quick.
Good. 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 This is good. I actually, this is a cool quick story. I was looking, I just had pulled up the NCAA men's basketball schedule for tonight up on my laptop right here. I was looking at it and I realized that I walked past the Duke men's basketball team downtown tonight on my way
out of Marvin Bagley?
That's really cool.
Out of work. And I don't remember who I saw. I saw three dudes getting on the bus.
That's really cool.
But Duke, you saw three guys getting on a bus, and you just immediately said they're Duke basketball players?
Well, they had Duke basketball bags. Yeah, they had Duke basketball jerseys, jackets. Yeah, on the front of the bus, it said Duke men's basketball. So I assumed that it was Duke men's basketball here in Pittsburgh. Assumption. Because also because Duke men's basketball is playing Pitt men's basketball tonight at 7 o'clock.
Duke minus 20.
Yeah, Duke
just,
minus 20.
You know, throwing this out there. I have two things. One, the whole time you were saying that, I was thinking you were talking about Duquesne, not realizing you were talking about
it. Oh, city game? Oh, you mean the city game? We got that.
Second thing, just news update here. Matt has the most adorable little dog mug sitting on his nightstand right now, and aww. I must tell you, we'll have pictures, you know.
Coach, after, I'm gentle.
Oh my god, it is adorable. It's just wow.
It's not gentle, it's delicate.
Delicate. Oh, I'm gentle.
I feel like I need to go pet the mug. Like it's like that adorable.
It makes coffee taste so much better.
Is it of Kaiser?
No, it's kind
it's of
just,
Kaiser's brother.
It literally looks like Kaiser's brother. Shout out Tucker.
Shameless plug there.
Yeah, but yeah, shout out to my brother's dog. Shameless plug for him. Free marketing. No,
but really, fuck the Rams.
But
knock on wood.
No, but
yeah,
another...
you keep yeah, dude. You know what happened to me when I put all that slander.
You did it so much worse. You were texting me at 2:30 in the morning. Pictures of Carson Wentz tearing the play and tearing his ACL. So you don't get to say anything there.
I just knew that you were probably having a good time being hammered downtown, and I just wanted to bring you back down to earth a little bit.
I'm pretty sure I was, like, sitting at my kitchen counter, like, relatively sober, and I just, my phone vibrates. I'm like, oh, somebody's texting me, like, this is awesome, and then it's a fucking picture from Ben.
That's the exact response I wanted to have for you. Just get all excited, like, oh, wow, someone's actually in my messages, and then open it up to Carson Wentz blowing his knee out.
See, I know for a fact that was not your mindset. I know for a fact that was not your mindset. You were drunk as hell somewhere. You're like, I need to fuck with Sean right now.
Yeah, that's actually, you might have hit the nail on the head on that one. Yeah, that's probably pretty accurate.
Thank you.
No, but there's been, the other game that's actually important tonight, Xavier playing Villanova.
I should have worn my Villanova shirt.
It's 10 against 1, and it's pretty cool because we've seen a decent amount of upsets in the last couple weeks. Michigan State lost recently, Duke lost recently, which is why I brought them up. Virginia lost recently, and Villanova lost recently. So
I am all here on the Xavier train tonight because if Nova can lose, Virginia won, new number one, baby.
And
new
so,
number one.
But there's no team in the top 25 right now in the either coaches poll or AP that is undefeated right now, which is really cool to me because it was very similar case as we approached March Madness last season, and it made for a great tournament, in my opinion.
Into this year, they said it was Duke's, like, title to lose.
It doesn't look like it right now.
Yeah, I know.
No, it does not.
I would definitely agree with that.
Since 13-2.
Out of all the teams, though, in the coaches' AP Top 25, only one of them is undefeated in America, though, and that's West Virginia. Our only loss was in Germany.
I fucking hate you.
I'm just saying, dude, Tom Crean,
that was like the worst come in, like you could like, oh, they're
Tom
undefeated
Crean
in the United States, but
Tom
let me
Crean
tell you.
Tom said it last night on the broadcast. He was really, cuz they were saying like they were like doing like the fan vote and they were like who should be number 1, Villanova, Virginia, or West Virginia, and Tom Crean was just like, "Well, out of all those teams, only one team hasn't lost in the United States, and that's West Virginia.
Thank,
so I'm gonna go with them."
Thank God you gave him credit there, or else you would have plagiarized there, Ben.
Exactly.
Shout out to the dictionary word.
Which we both got the spelling wrong and the definition correct. So at least I know what it means.
Yeah, but you were about to do it, fool. If I wouldn't have called you out there, you would
about
have totally
to
taken credit for that.
Almost only counts in horseshoes and hand grenades, Sean. We all know this.
I don't know if I'd give hand grenades that.
All right, so we were joined today by Dan Wolkin, national columnist at USA Today Sports. He recently covered the college football national championship, among a number of other initiatives for college football. He was nice enough to come on the show with us today and talk to us about his experience. And he was
the, and also break my heart.
And he was
the, no, that meant okay. No, I'm not gonna say that.
And he became the first guest on Room Temp Show. So here's Dan Wolkin joining us today on Room Temp. All right, we are joined here by Dan Wolkin for the USA Today Sports. He's a national columnist, focuses on college football, and more recently was present at the college football national championship, the Alabama game against Georgia. Dan, thanks again for joining us. Let's just wanted to hear your, you know, what you do on a daily basis involved with college football and kind of your day-to-day life.
Well, one thing about being a sports reporter is you rarely have 2 days that are exactly the same, especially when you are covering from a national perspective, because it's a pretty big country and there's a lot going on all the time. You can't hit every single story. You know, I think my job at USA Today Sports, and as it's evolved, obviously it's important to live in the digital world and to get things up quickly, because news, the shelf life for it is relatively small, much smaller than it used to be. Stories change all the time, and so you got to kind of be fast, flexible, right, and insightful all at once, and that's not always an easy thing to do. But, you know, I try to hit the big issues and whatever the thing is that people are going to be talking about, and, you know, sometimes you just have to have a nose for that. It's not always obvious. But there's also breaking news, especially this time of year. You have a lot of things going on with coaching changes, and sometimes you've got off-season scandals. There's been a lot of that over the last year.
Oh, yeah.
And so you just sort of jump on whatever it is that needs to be jumped on, and it can be a different thing every day. And that's what makes it exciting and challenging. And obviously, during the season, there's maybe a little bit more rhythm with college football, because you know that on Saturday you're going to be generally writing about what happens at a game, whether you're there or whether you're watching it from your couch and just kind of observing. You know, and then through the week, there's days like Mondays and Tuesdays, Sunday sometimes, where there's better access. If you need to do certain interviews, you can get somebody on the phone or you go to a campus. But it really doesn't follow a daily schedule. It's kind of whatever you feel like you need to do, and you just find a way to get it done.
So are you traveling all the time? Like, do you ever just get to spend some time at home and watch this stuff? Or, like, how often are you traveling?
Well, it's a lot. You know, I didn't count up how many days I was on the road in 2017. But, you know, typically, you know, I'll be on the road, you know, maybe around 100 days a year, maybe a little bit less than that, depending on the year. You know, during the season, I've sort of cut back on how much I travel, especially to games. It's kind of one thing that's evolved, at least in my thinking, about how to best cover the sport of college football. It used to be kind of like if you were a college football writer, you just go to whatever the best game that week was, and you do that every single week. And I found that over time, especially in this era, the value of that is a lot lower. It's, you know, it takes a long time to get to a game, to get home. It's expensive for your employer, and you don't really get sort of the one-on-one access or interesting access. And a lot of times you see less live than you do on television, and you miss every other game. So in a lot of times you can, you know, put in all this effort to go somewhere and it's kind of a dud. That's a little bit, you know, that's always a little bit of a moving target, and you never know what is, you know, what's going to happen. I probably went to like 5 games or so this year before the college football playoff. You know, and a couple of them were in Atlanta or were close by. I think I went to one. I went to Alabama LSU, which is about a 3-hour drive for me. You know, it's just unless it's a huge game, I just don't find the value is there. I'd rather be somewhere making phone calls, you know, doing some actual reporting rather than sitting in a press box. It's just one of the ways it's evolved a little bit. But I do travel a lot to report stories, whether it's features, whether it's investigative pieces, whether it's things like the Olympics, which are coming up. You do end up spending quite a bit of time on airplanes and in hotels.
So you said you do like a lot of, you know, prior to the college football playoff, not a lot, but then the college playoff rolled around, not that many games going on. All the biggest ones are right there. So did you just go to the championship game or were you at the Rose Bowl and or the Alabama game?
No, I was at the Rose Bowl.
Oh, man.
Yeah, I was, you know, those bowl games, you know, they do 3 media availability, so it's a bit of a long week. But, yeah, Rose Bowl was my semifinal, and then the championship game, which was not really a travel for me since I live in Atlanta. Yeah, I mean, that's one of those that you definitely, if you're a news organization, you bring as much staff as you can to the playoff games because that's a big deal.
And I guess a kind of a follow up to that would be, you know, we'll get to the national championship game, but you know, we all talked about it on the show a couple of shows ago, right after the Rose Bowl. We're like, that is the best freaking game we've ever seen in our lives. You know, comparatively to the big stage of the national championship game, how did that game kind of compare? Being at both, I mean, because the national championship game was a great game and a big spectacle, but I think just, you know, that Oklahoma Georgia game, which is unfucking believable from the start.
I've seen a lot of great games, and I don't know exactly how I would rank it. I mean, it's definitely up there, and it was a pretty incredible, you know, atmosphere and the stakes and, you know, the number of big plays and exciting plays that were made. And obviously it goes to overtime and, you know, the Georgia defense shutting down Baker Mayfield when it really mattered. You know, it's interesting. It's definitely one of the better games, but I don't know if it's the best. It's probably, you know, somewhere in my top 5. You know, how do you measure best? And then sometimes there's a lot of recency bias that goes into that. It was a pretty incredible thing to see.
So getting into the national championship, the actual game we saw on Monday night, I guess from our perspective looking at it, the game itself kind of had everything. I mean, you had fights on the sideline with coaches. You had a comeback Alabama game, which, you know, you don't normally see, even though the last 4 championships or 5 championship games we've seen the eventual champion being the one down in the fourth quarter. We saw comebacks. We saw missed field goals. We saw, like, oh, you know, we saw a lot. So how did this game and experience, I'm not sure how many national championships you've been to, but how does this stack up with the other recent championship games we've seen to you?
I think this was maybe my 7th national championship game, something like that. I think because I've been to all of them since 2011. And, you know, it's actually 4 out of the last 5 years, the games have come down to, you know, the final play, essentially, or the final seconds. You know, I wasn't at the 05 game with Texas-USC. That's the one that people sort of cite as, you know, maybe the greatest college football game of all time. You know, I really think that last year with Clemson and Alabama stacks up very favorably, to that one. And it's probably the best championship game, in my opinion, because you had sort of the, you know, Alabama never loses a 10-point lead, really, and that's what they were, you know, trying to close it out. And Clemson comes back, and they take the lead with a couple minutes to go, or, you know, 4 minutes to go, and then Alabama scores on a crazy 40-yard run by Jalen Hurts, and then they take the lead, and then Deshaun Watson's got to come back down and drive his team down, and, you know, the the pick slash rub play at the end. I mean, to me, that game had all the elements and was sort of iconic because of what it meant, and Clemson winning it in an upset. You know, this one I would put. You know, honestly, I'd probably put the 13 game right behind the Clemson-Alabama, which was Auburn-Florida State. You know, Auburn had a 21-3 lead in that game. Jimbo Fisher turns it around with a fake punt, of all things. You had Jameis Winston, who had been in the news the prior few months because of the sexual assault allegation, and it was very controversial, the whole environment around that team. And then, you know, he brings them back. You know, Auburn, you know, comes back to retake the lead. You know, Kermit Whitfield with a kickoff return for a touchdown puts Florida State back in front. Auburn comes back down. Like, the lead changed hands like five times late in that game. And Kelvin Benjamin ends up catching the winning touchdown with, you know, just a handful of seconds left. So that was, I'd say that was probably a little bit better overall game than the one this year, but it's been pretty amazing the run that college football's been on with great championship games.
Yeah, and I know in the past couple of years, speaking of just, you know, championship games, lots of winning, but we've also seen a decent number of teams on these big stages blow big leads. I mean, not just college football. You obviously have, like, the infamous Warriors blowing a 3-1 lead, and the next year, like, subsequently, the Indians doing the same thing. The Falcons last year in the Super Bowl. I'm sure that hit home for a lot of Georgia fans. How much, if we're going to talk a little bit more specifically on this game, I don't necessarily want a straight answer, but do you think this was more Alabama just being the better team and waiting this out and winning it, or was this Georgia kind of shooting themselves in the foot here and blowing this lead?
Well, I don't know that Georgia shot themselves in the foot necessarily, but they had a bunch of opportunities to close it out, and they couldn't do it. And I think that's going to be really disappointing. And it's a combination of both. You know, I think that Alabama, you know, they were not going to win that game without a quarterback change. They weren't going to be able to get to that Georgia defense at all. I think that was pretty obvious from the first half, and that's why Nick Saban was bold enough to make that decision. And, you know, I think that it transformed their offense. You know, Alabama is far more talented on offense than they played for most of the year, where they just didn't look all that dangerous because teams – essentially sold out to stop the run and just felt like Jalen Hurts really couldn't beat them. And, you know, that's what happened. You know, and you get into a game against Georgia, who's got an elite defense, and, you know, and Alabama just couldn't get anything done. And so it was a totally different Alabama team because the quarterback changes that much for them with the ability to throw the ball. So, that has to be taken into account. But even having said that, you know, Georgia's up 20-7. You know, there were a couple opportunities to get off the field on the drive where Alabama tied it up, where, you know, they commit a pass interference penalty on third down. They have it 4th and 4, can't make a play. You know, in overtime, they get a sack at 2nd and 26. And with Alabama's field goal kicking situation, I mean, that should be that's a situation where, you know, Georgia, frankly, should have won the game. And, you know, so I think it's both. And they're going to look back and be very disappointed that they didn't get that done.
You talked about the quarterback kind of change there and how, you know, Alabama's offense just frankly didn't look dangerous kind of all year with Jalen in there. You know, all of a sudden you switch over. And, you know, where does this kind of leave Alabama going into next year with both Jalen and Tua? Like, do they stick with Tua? Do they go with Jalen? Does Jalen, you know, what does he do if they don't go with him? What do you kind of see the quarterback situation kind of panning out to be with Alabama in the aftermath of this national championship?
Yeah, I mean, there's obviously a couple layers to it. One is, does Jalen Hurts stick around or does he transfer? You know, and yeah. I would say probably he sticks around, but it'll clearly be a big competition, and that'll be a pretty dominant storyline for Alabama in the spring and into the fall. And I think the expectation, based on what we saw this season and in the championship game, is that Tua would probably end up winning the job.
Yeah.
And at that point, you know, then what do? Do you find ways to use him? Do you try to move him to a different position? Does he, you know, if in the spring, if he loses his job, does he transfer then? I don't really know how it's going to go, but you know, I think most people would be pretty surprised if Tua Tagovailoa is not the starting quarterback next year.
Well, so we talked about Alabama's QB situation, so might as well bring up Georgia's. So, Fromm did a great job this year, stepping in for the injured starter at the beginning of the season, Eason, who just announced, he did announce that he's going to Washington, I believe, for transferring to Washington. And then they also just got Justin Fields, who is going to be, who is the number two overall prospect in this year's recruiting class. What do you think the QB situation for Georgia is going to be going into next year?
Yeah, that's another super interesting situation. And, you know, I do think that Fromm showed a lot of his ability and his leadership and a lot of, you know, third down, his success against Alabama and his abilities to stay composed in the pocket and deliver the ball. I mean, he's got a huge future in front of him. And I do think it'll be hard to displace him from that job. But, you know, then on the other hand, Justin Fields, you know, if he is as advertised, he seems like, from what people have said, he's one of those unique talents that is hard to keep off the field. So I think that one is a little more murky because you do have with Eason, it's not like he can't throw the ball. I mean, he's good. He's a good passer. He's a good quarterback. And Georgia's offense functions very well, and they're going to have a lot of their talent back. And so I'm less certain about that one, and I don't know which way it would go. I would certainly believe Fromm starts next season at quarterback. How it ends up, that's, you know, that's way too far in the future for me to really project. But yeah, it definitely makes Georgia an interesting team going into next year.
So you just said difficult to project, but do you think we might see Georgia rebound and be back in this playoff next year? I mean, I know we read your article post-game. What was the sort of sentiment from the Georgia players after that game that you found?
Well, they were devastated for sure. Right. I mean, and frankly, a lot of those guys are leaving and they're not going to be back. And, you know, I think that makes Georgia a pretty interesting team next year, because when you look at their roster, I mean, they're going to have a ton of talent. The recruiting class they're bringing in is outstanding, and I'm sure a lot of those guys are going to be ready to go. You know, you bring back DeAndre Swift at running back. A couple of their good better receivers are going to be there. Isaac Nauta, the tight end, their offensive line is going to be better. But they do lose a lot, and they lose a lot of leadership. You know, and both of those great running backs. From, you know, defensively, you lose Lorenzo Carter. He hasn't announced, but I'm guessing Roquan Smith will turn pro. They will lose kind of the heart and soul of their team. You ask people associated with that program sort of how they turned it this year, and a lot of it goes to the seniors that were there, that bought in, and that kind of brought everyone else along. And so they'll be a fundamentally different team from an experience and leadership perspective, but they're still going to be pretty talented. So, you know, what does all that mean? They're going to be the favorite in the SEC East. If they get that done, it'll give them a chance to play for an SEC title, you know, which gives them a chance to get back to the playoff. But, you know, to sit here and say that they're going to be a dominant team next year, there's probably just a lot of unknowns to me for me to be able to say that right now.
Right. And going off of that, we've had a couple arguments, I'll say discussions, but it's pretty much an argument about the structure of the college football playoff. Four teams of right now. I don't know how you're being around it so often. Do you agree with it? Like, if you were in charge, how would you fix it? What do you think of the current playoff structure we're seeing with, you know, just the top four teams going? And there's almost always some sort of controversy, is not the right word, but like someone's always obviously going to go home disappointed, but like someone who maybe feels that they got snubbed.
I personally would limit it to conference champions. You know, and I know that Alabama won it this year and was not a conference champion, and you know, I understand that. But you know, I think it is a little too subjective the way it is right now. Mm-hmm. And I think that, you know, if you don't win your conference championship and you get a pass into the playoff, it does sort of devalue the regular season in a way that I think is a little bit unintentional. And I know that, you know, they want to say the whole body of work should matter, but let's be honest, it's just extremely subjective. You know, Alabama, as good of a team as they were, you know, they didn't have a sensational regular season. They didn't beat a team that was ranked in the top 15. And, you know, their last game, they got beat pretty good by Auburn. And so I just don't believe that they should have been in based on accomplishment, which I think really should be the baseline for the committee as opposed to just, well, who we think is better. I don't think that's a very consistent way of doing it. And I don't think it encourages out of conference schedules to be strong because, to me, if I'm looking at what happened this year, you know, and I'm Ohio State, I'm sitting there saying, why did we play Oklahoma?
Right.
I think there were a couple of, you know, if you were USC, I think you're sitting there thinking, why do we play Notre Dame every year? You know, our schedule's hard enough, and if we can win our conference with one loss, we're probably getting in. So I think they really should look at that. I don't think they will, but, you know, I'm not sure about expansion of the playoff. I think there's a lot of, just personally for me, I don't know that it would help matters or make it better, but I would limit the four to conference champions only.
So,
go ahead, Sean.
So obviously, it's the end of the season. We had the national championship game. As of now, we read your article of projecting like the top 25 for next year. As of now, how do you think next year's gonna stack up compared to this year?
Well, that was actually Paul Meyerberg. He's my colleague. He does that preseason top 25, so I'll give him credit for that. But you know, I think it's a lot like the past couple years. I mean, I think, you know, you look at the powers, traditional powers, and the teams that have been recruiting the best. You know, they're the ones that are going to be in the mix. And you know, I think it's pretty easy to sort of pencil in Alabama and. You pencil in Clemson from the ACC. They're not going anywhere. I think Ohio State from the Big Ten, I think you pencil them in. And although Wisconsin brings a lot back, and they should be a big challenger again. And, Washington should be better next year. I thought this year was a real missed opportunity for Washington. They dropped a couple games that I really am surprised they lost. So I think they'll be better next year. Senior quarterback. I think they've got a great chance to get in, and you know, then who knows? I mean, the Big 12's probably got more question marks. Oklahoma losing Baker Mayfield, but they will still have a lot of talent and a terrific offensive system that will give them a chance. Georgia will be in the mix. You know, maybe Miami. I think it's. Not a lot of change, honestly, from the last couple of years.
And you've been really gracious with your time. We'll wrap it up here shortly. But I go to school in West Virginia. You mentioned the question marks in the Big 12, so it would just pain me to not ask you. ESPN did their most, their way too early top rankings. They had West Virginia at number 10 with Greer coming back, with Sills coming back, Hogo taking over the play calling, a top 15 recruiting class. Baker Mayfield leaving there. Is there, can you give me some sort of hope here for next year that I can finally, I'm graduating this year, but at least just in my lifetime, see them be a perennial kind of, a problem team next year?
Well, yeah, I'm sure. Like they could certainly, move up in the world, and they will have a lot of experience back and a lot of ingredients back. But, you just have to see them go do it. And I think a lot of people will probably be slow to buy into a West Virginia because they haven't done it. What were they, 8-5 this year or something like that?
Six and seven. Because Greer broke his finger and we lost the last two games and the bowl game. So I don't think we hit seven wins.
Yeah, but even before that, I don't think it was a solid team, but it wasn't
what it should be.
They weren't really threatening to win a Big 12 title. So you know, I think that's a pretty long climb, to be honest with you, from where they were for this year to getting into the playoffs. So, you know, I mean, you never know year to year. Things change, and they will have good players back and all that stuff. But, you know, I'm going to have to see it before I buy in.
You and me both, man. You and me both.
Well, honestly, Dan, thank you so much for taking time out of your day. I'm sure you're busy, especially this week with this wrapping up. Again, thank you so much, Dan Wolkin, at Dan Wolkin on Twitter. He's a columnist for USA Today Sports, focusing on college football, basketball, and basically any other big story he can get his hands on. So thank you again for coming on the show with us today.
Yeah, you got it, guys. Thanks.
Thanks, man. See you later.
Appreciate it. All right, and again, thank you. A big thank you to Dan for coming on the show with us. I thoroughly enjoyed hearing his insights, especially as someone who, you know, covers this stuff full time and kind of getting a chance to understand exactly how hectic the whole, you know, world of college football is, because we're pretty much just spectators to it at this point. So it was great to hear again. Thanks for Dan for coming on. Over to what we didn't do on Tuesday and what we normally do now, coming up to this second round of playoffs in the NFL. We're talking Atlanta at Philly. We're talking Tennessee at New England. We're talking Jacksonville at Pittsburgh and New Orleans at Minnesota. What are we thinking, guys?
I'm thinking birds, birds, birds. And by birds, I mean Philadelphia Eagles.
Okay.
Sorry, that was all I had. I just came out of nowhere.
Get your hopes up, bro. If I'm picking straight winners, which we all know I can do, I'm doing New Orleans. I think New Orleans is going to beat Minnesota. I'm going Atlanta because fuck Sean and fuck the Eagles. And my upset pick of the week, Jacksonville, dude. I think Jacksonville can beat the Steelers. And no need to even cover the Patriots game, dude. That's going to be a bloodbath.
All right, so I'm taking Philly, Tennessee, Jacksonville, and... No, I'm kidding. I'm definitely taking Philly, though. The Philadelphia Eagles. Let's get it. I'm so excited.
All right, so...
It's on my birthday.
So they're going to lose?
No, so they're going to win. If they lose, it's going to be... I need somebody to watch me.
So we skipped the whole point where we predict the score.
Yeah. I don't even need... I don't even need to predict the score because I just know...
You know what?
They're going to win.
That's sure. All right. Jesus Christ, we're gutting through this one slow. All right. Atlanta at Philly. The line's 2.5 in favor of Atlanta still.
Smashing Atlanta, dude. Smashing Atlanta.
And no. 41 is the over-under. Give us your score predictions, and you guys can write them down.
Last year that they played, I think it was 24-15.
Sure. Same team that you guys played last year, right?
Carson Wentz didn't throw a single touchdown, a single interception. He did fumble it once.
And Carson Wentz is certainly playing in this game.
Well, shut the fuck up. That's what I'm saying. He didn't have an impact in last year's game, so it was actually all Ryan Matthews, which I would say we have decently better running backs.
Also is not going to have an impact in this
then,
game.
Yeah, okay, Ben. Jeez. Let me talk. JJ is getting prepped for a big workload. I think they're going to run. I think Nick Foles isn't going to have, like, some crazy, flashy, outstanding performance, but I do think he'll have at least a touchdown, and I'm going to predict that he won't have a turnover. This game is going to get – whoever wins the trenches in this game is going to win the game. I see Philly doing it. The home field advantage helps out. They're prepared to be underdogs. They've been prepared to be underdogs all year. They've said that all, like, they really have.
Philly has 14-2. Philly is prepared to be underdogs all season.
Coming into this year, I told you, I've said this before. They were predicted to be
at
last
11 and
last
whatever
place.
The hell they were for, like.
Well, I mean, at that point, yes, okay.
Right,
at that
so they
point,
haven't been all
at
season.
At that point, no, no.
Okay.
I'd say half the season.
I'd say all of the season almost, other than the last 2 weeks.
Just because they're winners, man.
So they're winners or they're underdogs?
Shut the fuck up. I think that a JJ is going to have a game. I'm predicting over 100 yards for him and at least one score. Potentially another score from one of our other running backs. I'm going to say it's going to be relatively close to what it was last year, 24-17 Philly.
All right.
I think that, like I said on the last show, like, I think that Atlanta should and will have a similar game plan against Philly like they did against the Rams, just shut down the run and force Nick Foles to beat me. And I think that they are better in the secondary than I think you are giving them credit for. And I think that Nick Foles is not – while Carson Wentz may have not had an impact, I definitely think Nick Foles is going to have a negative impact on this game. I think your defense will keep you in it. I think this is going to be very similar to how the Rams and the Falcons game went. Like, I think that Philly's defense is going to keep you in it, but, like, the offense is just not going to do enough to, when it really matters against this defense. And I think that Philly is going to lose to a similar margin that the Rams did. I think it's going to be 28 – I'm going to go 28-14. Atlanta.
This game, so I like, man, this one's, I actually, the more that I looked into this game, the more I kind of got frustrated with thinking of a prediction for this game, because it could go a lot of ways. In my head, I think this is a game where Nick Foles will actually have like 250 plus yards, only one touchdown and two interceptions or something like that. I could see that being the game Nick Foles have, which like is like, okay, that's the game I expect Nick Foles to have.
Blake Bortles stats.
Right. And like, and sure, and Jay, so in my head, I go, all right, there's one score for Nick Foles. I think Jay Ajayi might get one of those where he throws until they get to the end, the fucking touchdown, and then he punches it through for the score or something like that. So there's another score. Then I could see them hitting maybe two field goals. So that gives them, what, 20 points? I don't know if I can see them doing more than that. That might be something that their defense does. So I might give a little bit of leeway to Philly here. I do think they take this game. I think this game ends 27. Oh, man. No, it's going to be 26-21 Philly.
Wow.
Yeah, odd score. I think okay. 26. Ben, what did you say for your score? Sorry.
28-14 Atlanta.
28-14 Atlanta. So they're just smashing that. All right. Tennessee. Oh, crushing it. So we got Tennessee at New England. It's -13.5. This is that Tennessee team we've been talking about who just makes people play like shit. Play them on their level. That's not New England, but just saying that that's been their thing. So what are our thoughts on this? Any chance for Tennessee at all?
Yes. If Marcus Mariota can throw three touchdown passes to himself, they will win this game.
They will win this game. They will be, come out victorious.
You heard it here first. No. No, they don't have
any chance. On second thought, absolutely not.
Absolutely not.
See, we say that and then watch them pull out like the craziest and I'll be like, the one sitting upset there. In the past 10 years. And it's just like, oh my goodness. No, I mean, I personally just don't think they have a shot. New England definitely got handed a very, very easy playoffs this year. I see the game being 38-24 Patriots.
Go for it, Ben.
I don't, in the wake of like all this news that's surrounding the Patriots, like they're going to kind of spin it like, oh, we have all these distractions, yada, 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 whatever, whatever. But I think that they're just going to just come out there and crush them like New England ways. But I say this every time we all think a team's going to crush it. I'm going back to the Giants and Broncos game, like before, like every time we say that a team's going to crush somebody, they end up not crushing them. So I don't, you know, take this with a grain of salt, but like, I just, you know, Tennessee, I think will give them a fight, but at the end of the day, you know, Brady, Belichick versus Mariota and Malarkey, I think we know where we're going to go with that every time. I think it's going to be 38-17.
I could see this game being very similar to the Steelers game with the Titans earlier in the year, where like the Titans kept it close for three quarters.
And then just got blown to bits.
Yeah, like absolute tiny pieces.
Bro, you're going to bet against Marcus Mariota.
Yes.
Who just threw a fucking touchdown to himself.
I told you, the only possible shot.
After beating the Chiefs.
The only possible shot that they have, the only shot, is if he can throw three touchdown passes to himself. 29. And I'm not talking little dinkers to bounce off the defender's hands. I'm talking he needs to throw the ball in the air and run down the field and catch it.
29-24 Tennessee.
Wow.
I'm gonna go with the narrative that I've been going with, just because it's gonna. If I go with New England this game, the Titans are gonna win. So this is my way of saying New England's gonna win this game, because I have to bet on the Tennessee Titans this game, just because if I bet on New England, it's gonna be that fucking thing that I've been saying this whole season, where it's just been Tennessee wins in the shittiest ways, and they make other teams play like crap, and it's not because they're good, and we're gonna see. Because of the dissension in the New England camp, we're going to see some bad play calls. We're going to see some mistakes on New England, which we don't normally see. And we're going to see Tennessee take advantage of those. Derrick Henry's going to have a game and a half. and Tennessee's going to come out the victor here. If you want the truth.
There. I see what you're doing there. Reverse psychology.
If you want the truth.
I don't really know who you want to win right now.
Yeah.
You confused me.
If you want the truth, I think my prediction is going to stand 29-24 Tennessee. But if you want the truth, what I think is going to happen, actually, if you look throughout history with in the last decade with the New England Patriots, specifically when they have like scandals or like just things going on, like dissension or bad things,
distractions
is when they play their best. So what I actually think is going to happen is what you guys have been saying, more of the same, but Tennessee is just like such a weird team. They're such an annoyingly weird team that I don't know. We'll see what happens, but I'm going to stand with my prediction and I can take that mulligan loss on this weekend's bet on this weekend's games. If
again,
that's the case.
I have no fucking idea who you want to win this game.
Good. Good. Good.
What he just did was covered his own bases, is that no matter who wins, he wins. Because he was like, I'm picking Tennessee, but like, if I pick Tennessee, it really means I'm picking the Patriots. So like, I am picking the Patriots, but I'm saying I'm picking Tennessee.
I really, really, really hope it's a tie.
Sean, that's just...
That was a joke, Ben. That was me trying to be funny, which clearly worked because you left. Okay, so we got Jacksonville and Pitt. The line for this is -7.5 Pittsburgh. Over-under is at 41. Obviously, we've talked about it all year. Jacksonville's defense is just stupid good. They have they might have the two best cornerbacks like in the league playing on the same team, which is fantastic. Plus, you have an offense that just is not it's either like amazing, like Blake Bortles could come out here and throw for 4 touchdowns and like 350 yards and like it would be the craziest thing ever, but then he could also come out and throw for no touchdowns and 3 interceptions. So this team definitely relies heavily on their defense.
Are you surprised that this game is only 7.5 in the favor of Pittsburgh?
Yes.
No, just extremely. Because of what happened earlier this year.
That's what I mean.
That's exactly why the line's that.
What, so much more? I think it's high.
No, I don't think
it's high. Yeah, I think it's extremely high.
I don't think it's high at all.
I don't think... Steelers are going to beat them, dude, I don't think it's going to be by more than a touchdown.
It's at home for the Steelers. It's playoff football. Big Ben has like came out and said he wanted to play this team just because like that. There's like he's basically saying
he's mulligan. 5 interceptions against
him. He's coming off a torn calf.
Exactly, and you get AB coming back. Like I don't really... I'm not that surprised by them being favored by this much, especially since Jacksonville only scored 10 points at home.
Against the Bills.
So, yeah, I'm not too surprised. I think Pittsburgh. I think this will be another one of those games that stays kind of close, just because of how good Jacksonville's defense is. But at some point, Pittsburgh's going to take it away a little bit. I see Pittsburgh winning by at least 10. I'll say they haven't really scored more than 30 points too many times this year, so I'm going to stay on that train. I'm going to go 28. Yeah, fuck it. Let's go 33 Steelers and 20 Jacksonville.
I'm going to flip the script a little bit. I think that Jacksonville's defense wins championships. They have a great running game. I think the Steelers' defense without Ryan Shazier and Artie Burns just hurt his knee in practice today. So, like, they're pretty banged up on the defensive side of the ball. I could see Fournette, like I could see Jacksonville relying heavily on Fournette and Bortles' ability to run the ball now all of a sudden, getting more rushing yards and passing yards last week. I think this defense for Jacksonville is something that is very, very formidable. I mean, AB even coming back off injury, like we'll still have to go up against Jalen Ramsey and or AJ Bouye. And I think that if any team is going to beat the Steelers other than the Patriots, I think it could be Jacksonville. And I think that Jacksonville will actually turn up to win this game. Like, I think that Jacksonville's a tough team. And regardless, going into Pittsburgh, whatever, like, I think if they rely on their defense and their run game, they have a legitimate chance to win this game. I think it's going to be low scoring. I'm going to go 20-16 Jacksonville over Pittsburgh.
I'm going to keep my, you said 20-16?
20-16, yeah.
All right, I'm going to write that down for you. I have a pretty similar narrative to Sean. Fournette has been such a formidable guy behind the line there, but Le'Veon's just Le'Veon. He averaged 120 scrimmage yards a game since he's been in the league. Like,
Le'Veon's just like if you are comparing him to Fournette, like Fournette's that downhill runner. Like,
I'm comparing catching. Run games.
In no, general. No, yeah. So yeah. That's what I'm saying. You have a lot more with what the Steelers have than you do with Fournette. Right.
So I mean, like it's you can compare the two run games as good. If we're gonna compare receivers, I mean, obviously Pittsburgh. If we're gonna compare defenses, obviously Jacksonville. To me, though, Pittsburgh is one of those teams. Jacksonville is like a fiery team when you play them, especially on D. They're not like that on offense, even when they're clicking. Like even when I see the Jacksonville offense clicking, I don't like see like I don't know.
What I'm getting from what Matt's saying is this game is going to come down to special teams.
No, this game is going to come down to the same thing that like I see in what the Bills did this season, where the Bills were not the most skilled team at all. I don't think on paper they should have been in the playoffs. I think that the Bills should have been in the playoffs, though, based off of that passion that the Bills team played with. It's like punching up a weight class. For some reason, they end up doing it. And it's the same thing with Jacksonville playing Pitt right now. If they come into this game and punch Pittsburgh in the mouth early on, I think Jacksonville can win it. But I think that Pittsburgh's so ready for this to be their last season that they can possibly win the Super Bowl because Big Ben's just getting too old, and I don't think it's going to be enough. I think Pittsburgh wins this 30-20.
I'm calling it right now. There will be a punt and or kick return in this game.
Yeah?
Yep. Calling it. Lock it in. It's going to happen.
All right. And then our last one, we got New Orleans at Minnesota. Minnesota is the favorite team by 3.5, over-under is 45.5. What are we thinking?
Oh, this is going to be the best game of the weekend, I believe. It's going to be real tight. But as Ben said earlier, defense wins championships. I see Minnesota winning this 31-28.
See, I'm going to go... On the back
of Case Keenum's 3 touchdown passes.
Put some slander on his name.
I was going to go there. I think that... This is the week that Case Keenum fucking chokes this shit away, and I can finally feel liberated of Case Keenum. He's been good all year, and like, what better way for Case Keenum to be Case Keenum than in the divisional round of the playoffs? Like, I feel like this is just the game for him to just be like, "Oh, wait a minute, I'm Case fucking Keenum," and then just complete eruption, complete blow up. I am hoping that it happens. I think that
did you just stick your tongue under out the and blow?
No, it was all lips and cheek, like a horse.
It was all lips and cheek. Oh God! All
right,
but yeah, I think that the Saints are gonna win. I think that it's gonna go under 46, but I think that it's gonna be. I want to go 24-20. 24-20 Saints.
See, I think the only way the Saints can win this game is if their run game works, which it did not in the last game. Minnesota's defense, like their secondary, is also very, very good. I don't think their corners, like their corners, are really good. I don't think they're as good as Jacksonville's, but I think overall, like with their safeties and everyone combined, they're overall better.
Pretty
secondary.
Fucking good defense, yeah.
I'm gonna go with Minnesota.
I'm gonna take Drew Brees over Case Keenum. That's my last thought.
I also take lining up the two of them. I take Drew Brees over Case Keenum, but I don't know if I take the
Minnesota.
I don't think I take the Minnesota team over New Orleans this game, mostly because I think that New Orleans is a super dynamic team. They can they adjust more, they change the way that they play because they have the talent to do so, but they're not always consistent in doing that. I don't mean that they lose games because of that. I just mean they don't play as well as they could be playing because they have to change. It's they stop the run game, they have a good Drew Brees has 450,000 yards in that game, or they have great corners, let's run a million yards because they can. But sometimes it either screws with their line. You see a lot more mistakes because of that. With Minnesota, the way that they play, or the way we've seen them play this season, and how it has allowed Case Keenum to be seen as a good quarterback, is that they play such a tidy, tightly knit, organized sort of game where it's this is the system that we're going to play. I think Sean said it really well earlier this year, mostly because I've been listening to our old podcast for some reason, that... The Minnesota team has a QB-friendly team where it's you could stick a number of quarterbacks into this Minnesota team regardless of whether or not they're actually that good or not, ergo Case Keenum, and they turn out pretty well. So I think that in the playoffs, that organizational skill that we've seen with Minnesota this season is going to be a huge X factor in this game. And I think Minnesota ends up winning this game 34-24.
X factor, Latavius Murray, 105 yards and a touchdown.
X factor, Case Keenum, 100 rushing yards.
You mean Case Vic?
Vic Keenum?
Holy shit.
Michael Keenum? All right, then we'll get you guys our scores as we did last week for the playoff games too. Final thoughts, guys, because I know Ben has to go.
Yeah, my final thought is fuck night classes. 6:50 to 9:50 tonight. Going to be real fucking great. But honestly, my final thought, shout out to Dan for coming on. That's a great interview, great first interview for us. Big steps, you know, we're making leaps and bounds here, boys. Let's get it going. Let's keep the momentum rolling. Wow. But yeah, with that, Benny Beans is out.
My final thought is that Ben has noodle arms. That's my final thought.
Not like Mike Glennon, though.
Not like Mike Glennon.
Glennon's got a flamingo. The noodle of noodle arms. No, he's a flamingo. You have like rigatoni arms.
Rigatoni. You're rigatoni.
Rigatoni.
Hey, rigatoni.
You're more like al dente penne.
Maybe with a little sauce.
Yeah. My final thought is that I'm kind of ready to ball. I haven't played a sport since like July.
Whoa, couple athletes.
I mean, I don't know if you heard what I said. Since July,
like,
so,
dude, that is like
last year, dude.
Yeah, like, oh my god.
Whoa, I haven't played basketball since 2017, dude. Yeah. Jesus,
I haven't seen you since 2017. How was your winter break, bro?
Ben, can you even spell July?
July. J E W E L Y.
Correct. Correct. But all right, thanks for joining us, guys. We'll be coming back to you on either Monday or Tuesday next week after this weekend. We'll have...
Hopefully I'm here.
Hopefully you're here. I don't know why you wouldn't be. But,
happy birthday to myself.
Yeah, sure, dude. thanks again for joining us, guys. We'll be getting you a new episode Monday or Tuesday. Make sure you guys follow us at Twitter, at RoomTempShow. Follow Dan Wolken, at Dan Wolken, W-O-L-K-E-N. And, you know, as always, stay toasty.
I wouldn't have been able to spell
that. Stay toasty, y'all. Peace.